タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタッタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
This week, we are chatting all about buttons and buttonholes. What different types of buttons are out there? How can you create a strong buttonhole or a sewn-on button? We cover all the details so your garments can be both professional and secure.
I like big buttons and I cannot lie. Those other buttons can't deny. When the
now it's falling apart. Thanks to Buffy for supporting Love to Sew. Buffy makes bedding that is super comfy and super sustainable. Buffy comforters keep you at the perfect temperature while you sleep so you feel cozy without overheating.
For $20 off your Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter promo code Love to Sew. And now, on to the show.
Hi, Caroline.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Really good.
Yeah.
A little loopy today, I think.
Woo-hoo, we're going to talk about butts and butts and butts and buttons.
What? Buttons and buttonholes. Who knew?
There was a whole episode.
This episode would be short. And then once we started prepping for it, we're like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And this.
You guys are in for it.
Yes. Hopefully lots to learn today. And it's good to review these things. And maybe you haven't yet tackled your first button or buttonhole, in which case you're really in for a treat. And your homework is definitely going to be to go and do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's time to take the leap.
But first, let's catch up. I feel like it's been a little bit.
It has been a little bit. Oh my gosh. It's an exciting week for us. We launched a pattern last week and it's still on sale in our shop. So I want to tell you guys a little bit about it. The Pona jacket is available now. It's named after a close friend of ours. And you will notice if you go and check it out that we have some very special models in the house for this pattern. Miss Caroline herself is modeling the Pona jacket alongside Tassia, who it is named after. And you guys both look freaking amazing.
It was really fun. I'm actually wearing one of the samples right now.
You are.
It looks so cute. Which is now my jacket.
I know Caroline was like, I don't think I can give these back to you. I'm like, you don't have to.
Yes.
It's all yours.
What a gift. It's really fun to have like handmade clothes that you didn't make yourself.
I know. I always give my models the samples.
Yes. It's great.
Because it feels nice. It feels nice. Like, I made it for you. You should have it. It looks great. And we're so excited. So I want to tell you a little bit about it. It's a modern oversized blazer with a bit of an exaggerated lapel, super easy to layer over pretty much any outfit. And it kind of turns a casual outfit into a put together look really quickly. Caroline's wearing hers right now over a Nico turtleneck and it looks really cute. Also looks great over a tank top and jeans, over a dress. We've got a cropped view and a long view so you can suit yourself there. And I think it's really great for any season because you can wear it as an extra layer, as I said, over sweaters in the wintertime or in the spring and summer, throw it on over your tank top and shorts and you just look instantly put together.
We had so much fun styling it up and the possibilities are really endless. Like, I really want to make a linen version with like I want to make a set. Like, I want to make a pair of linen trousers and like matching linen Pona jacket, because I feel like that would be like maybe in light pink linen, which is crazy.
You're making a pink pantsuit, basically.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I want to do for spring. Not yet, but for spring. Remind me in like February.
I will. I really want to see this. It is great for linen and it's that all year round linen look that you can totally rock in the wintertime too. Great for a midweight linen. Great for like a cotton twill or corduroy. It also works well in drapey fabrics like a tencel twill. It really depends what kind of look you're going for, but it's super versatile in that way. And it's also incredibly fast. You can have this jacket in an afternoon or an evening of sewing with cutting and sewing together because it is unlined, super fast. It's just that nice throw it on layer that you've been waiting for.
We have some really great dead stock suitings that would be really cool for the Pona.
Yes, you can totally use wools and suitings and fun stuff like that. We used a suiting for one of the samples and I think it's my favorite one. Just this beautiful subtle check. Oh, I love it. And best of all, it's beginner friendly. So if any of you out there have not tackled a jacket yet because you're a little bit intimidated by all of the details, do not fear. You can try this jacket as your first jacket. You'll get to sew a collar and a facing and put together a jacket that you can wear and show your friends and family and say, I made this jacket, and be super proud. It's the perfect step towards making that maybe lined coat you want to make this winter. This can be your first little jump.
It's a gateway jacket.
A gateway jacket. Exactly.
You're actually really great at doing those gateway patterns where it's like, this can be your first of this thing.
Exactly.
And I love that it's the oversized kind of grandpa style blazer, really easy to fit. So you don't have to worry so much about the shoulders. It has a drop shoulder. You don't have to worry so much about, you know, fitting any weird princess seams or anything. It's like cool, oversized. It's so chic. I love it so much.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Another one of your babies is born.
I know. I'm really excited about it. It's been a while coming, as they all are. It takes a while to get them out there. So it feels really good to release it to the world. So you guys can get the jacket for 20% off until November 15th. So if you're listening to this episode when it comes out, get on it.
Go get on it.
And thank you. Caroline, what's going on with you?
Well, I wanted to put a little plug for our fabrics this month because it's a pretty exciting month. We have a lot of fabrics that have been a long time coming that we are dropping this month. Some of my favorites ever. This past week, we just dropped a huge batch of European designer deadstock. Some of the most beautiful prints I've ever seen. The last time we dropped a batch from this supplier, they flew off the shelves. They are at a little bit of a higher price point. So I also wanted to mention that if you are a Patreon supporter at the $10 level or more, you get exclusive discount codes for both my shop and Helen's shop. So sign up, you'll get 15% off and you'll make your money back right away.
True.
If you buy fabric.
Yeah.
Because really, you'll save more than $10 a month if you're a regular customer.
Especially if you're buying some of those silk velvets. Oh my gosh.
Yes. We have silk velvets, which dropped a couple of weeks ago. And on Friday, we are dropping the coveted boiled wool and viscose. We've had so many requests for this. We considered not stocking it this year, but boy, did you guys have thoughts about that.
I want to make a boiled wool Pona jacket. Yes. I feel like it would be so cute.
Oh, it would be great. It's such a good fabric. It's not a coating, I will say that. It's lighter weight and drapier than like your typical boiled wool coating, but it's so good for those like tissue-y patterns that have the boiled wool, like raw edges. It's great for the cashmere Tobin sweater that she released recently. Great for so many things. Actually, my new employee, Alice, came to her interview wearing like a really simple box top out of boiled wool. And she just left the edges raw. So the neckline and the armholes were just raw. And it was just this cute little boxy top that she had tucked into her pants. And I was like, is that our boiled wool? She was like, yes. And I was like, you're hired. That's not exactly what happened. But I was really impressed. Such a good look. I loved it so much. And we also have some really cozy fleeces and matching ribs dropping. So
yes,
so many good fabrics this month. You guys, you have to go check them out.
I'm really excited.
Yes. But that's it for me. November's been a good month.
Good.
So far.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a really fun month and we're getting to the end of the year, which is exciting too. I need to start looking back on all of my goals for the year. Seeing how I'm doing.
This is actually my favorite time of year, like between Thanksgiving and New Year's Eve.
Canadian Thanksgiving,
yeah, yeah, which is like mid-October generally. And New Year's Eve, it's like my favorite time of year because my birthday's in there, Christmas time, holidays.
Nice cool weather.
Yeah. Beautiful leaves in Vancouver, like around October, mid-October. So yeah, I'm just like really feeling myself. Feeling good. The weather, feeling myself right now.
I love it. Don't be ashamed to admit it. I mean, if you go and look at the photo shoot for the pattern, oh, you'll see that Caroline is really, she's feeling herself.
I had so much fun modeling.
You look incredible. We put on Lizzo and you danced so much. Like so many of the photos, you're like dancing, your mouth is open. You're like having so much fun. Oh, like without the context of the song.
I just look a little crazy. Weird. That's okay. The nice thing is we took hundreds of photos and only about 3 or 4 of them are going to make it on the website, right?
So. I think we should share some of the best outtakes on our Patreon page for our supporters.
Oh, we totally should. Yeah. We totally should. Oh my gosh.
We'll do that. Oh my gosh. Okay, so we have a big episode to get to today, but first we have some feedback from Goheen Designs on Instagram. They said, after listening to you talk about wanting to make your own ironing table, I wanted to add a suggestion. I used to sew at a drapery workroom, and we had 3 giant tables that we worked on that were all completely ironable with the batting and the canvas on top. The best part, we put ceiling tiles inside above the wood but below the batting. Using the ceiling tiles makes sure the entire surface is a pin board as well, so you can pin things in place to the table while you iron. Game changer. This is totally happening for my workspace someday.
This is such a good idea because we have talked before about using a table, covering it with some batting and fabric to make your own ironing board.
I think we've also talked about using pin boards when we did that clone your own clothes episode. Mm-hmm. And you can use, you know, pins to pin out your garments. You can trace around it.
But ceiling tiles.
Brilliant.
Makes so much sense. Yeah. And then and you can pin and iron. And I love it. Thank you so much.
Great tip. Hope to see lots of these being made on Instagram this week.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a question from Anna. Hello, ladies. I have a ready-to-wear button-up shirt that appears to have a very fine top stitching thread. The stitches are barely visible compared to the polyester thread I use. I like that the top stitching is less noticeable. What thread would I use to create this look? Is this a durable method of construction? Thank you for all you do with the podcast.
Okay, so we went to the man himself, Mr. David Page Coffin, and his shirt making developing skills for fine sewing book that we both own because it's a great book. And he mentions that he uses cotton machine embroidery thread for sewing shirts, and for top stitching, this thread is actually quite fine. So it is different from the polyester thread that you're typically using when you're sewing. So he uses 2-ply threads similar to the yarns in the shirt. 2-ply threads are a little weaker, but they're still strong enough to do the job. And for heavier materials, David Page Coffin also recommends that 3-ply is an option.
I've also heard of silk thread being used for top stitching if you want that really fine detail. You just have to make sure you're buying the right kind of silk thread.
Yeah.
But I agree that it's a really nice touch if you can have that really fine top stitching on like a lighter weight button-up shirt kind of to match the weight of the fabric. So it's a great question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anna.
All right. So we have a lot to talk about in terms of buttons and buttonholes.
Yes. I think buttons can play a huge role in the overall look of the garment, how it feels, how it looks, the aesthetics, what kind of presentation you're going for. A button can change everything.
Yeah. Don't you love on Instagram when people do stories where they're like,
which one?
Here's my finished shirt. Now I get to choose the buttons and you get to like help them pick like which one. And it really does. It's like that finishing touch, the cherry on top that you don't really necessarily think about beforehand. But then when you get to that point, you're like, wow, this decision is really important.
Yes, it is. And sometimes you do need help either from a store where you're buying your buttons or online is a great place to get help as well. And when you're working with a pattern, the pattern envelope will indicate the recommended size of the button. And we do recommend that you go with that size for the most part. Varying up to 1/4 inch is doable. But if you deviate more than that, it can affect the garment's fit, drape, appearance, the intended look of the garment. Of course, you can do that if you want to. If you really want to change that look, you want to put big buttons on your Ganta overalls, or you want to put really tiny buttons and do more buttons than they did on the front of like a button-up shirt dress or something, that can look really amazing, but it's just something you need to be aware of. You are changing the look of the garment.
Yeah, so you might have to adjust the width of your facing, definitely adjusting the width of the buttonhole or the length of the buttonhole, keeping in mind that changing the size of the button significantly, you're going to have to make some changes to your garment.
Yeah, and with that too, you want to make sure that you're keeping with the orientation that the pattern has recommended. So they will recommend whether the buttonhole is positioned vertically or horizontally. And you do want to stick within that to, again, just be true to the intended look of the garment.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about button orientation later on in the show.
Mm-hmm. So how do you choose a button?
So when you're choosing buttons, you want to consider the nature of the fabric to the buttons. So for example, lightweight fabrics go really well with lighter weight buttons. And similarly, heavyweight fabrics, you want to pick a heftier button.
Mm-hmm. Also, buttons should have compatible care requirements to the garment fabric that you're using. So if you're planning on throwing your garment into the wash with the rest of your clothes, which I do with most of my garments, you might not want to choose, you know, a vintage glass button or a really delicate wood button. You want to choose those specialty buttons for garments that you are comfortable hand washing and caring for.
Yeah. Definitely.
So where do we shop for buttons in Vancouver?
Well, we are pretty lucky in Vancouver because we have a really cool little shop called Button Button.
And that's... what do they sell at Button Button?
They sell buttons.
And that's it. Yeah. It's amazing. It's this tiny little store
and it's super cute. Like there's just buttons everywhere. There's drawers of buttons. There's bins of buttons. There's shelves of buttons. There's displays of buttons. It's really small, but there are so many buttons in there. Every button you could want. And I go there for really special projects, things that I've spent a lot of time on where the button is just that finishing touch that I really want to find the perfect one. Mm-hmm. I know our friend Tassia goes there a lot when she's like knitting cardigans. She'll like go there to find like the perfect button to go with her hand knit cardigan. Yeah. And the owner there is amazing. She's really great at being like, I know just the one for you.
Oh, I go there with at least a fabric swatch, if not the whole garment, and be like, here it is. Please help me find a button because it's so overwhelming. There's so many. And yeah. I tell her kind of what I'm after. And then either her or one of her other people that works there helps so much with mm-hmm. choosing the button and showing you around the store and being like, what about this? Have you considered this? How about this? It's great.
Yeah. And we always, if people are coming to visit Vancouver and they ask where they should go, we always recommend going to Button Button because it's a really special little shop.
Yeah.
Dresso, our local fabric shop, also has a really great button selection in their basement, with their zipper wall. They have a whole section of buttons. It's overwhelming, but they have pretty much everything you could possibly need.
Organized by color, which I really appreciate.
Yes. Yeah. And I also shop my stash because I have so many buttons. Am I alone in this? Do you have a lot of buttons?
No, I have a lot of buttons. And I also remember when I was a kid, I'm assuming a lot of our listeners could relate to this, that my mom had a big tin of buttons and it was one of my favorite things in our house. Like I just loved opening it, dumping it out, playing with the buttons, putting them away, like picking out really pretty ones and like stealing them and putting them in my pocket.
Yeah.
You know, like I just loved the buttons and you stick your hand in there and it's really satisfying, that feeling on your fingers.
Oh yeah. A lot of my buttons are my grandmother's that my mom had and she passed them on to me. And then I also had a friend growing up who used to get me buttons from garage sales. So she'd bring me like a jar full of buttons that she found at garage sale. So I have accumulated a lot of buttons and then I've since organized them into jars by color. So often I have what I need in my stash. I usually shop my stash first for buttons. But if you are not local to Vancouver or if you don't live in my sewing room, you might want to buy your buttons online. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So there's definitely places online that you can do that. Your local fabric store, most local fabric stores will have buttons, at least a somewhat, you know,
robust selection. There's lots of shops on Etsy that sell buttons. That's a great place to look for more specialty things. You can also go the sustainable approach and shop at thrift stores for buttons. I would recommend taking buttons off garments that are fully worn out so you're not, you know, wrecking a garment just to get the buttons, mm-hmm. preferably taking it off of something that is already worn out that's not going to be reused. But you can also find buttons a lot of the times at thrift stores, like in their notions area, if they have one where they kind of bag things up and sell them. And, you know, here's a weird bag of buttons for $2.
Yeah,
yes, I'll take it.
And then there's also some websites like buttons.com and lotsofbuttons.com that have a pretty wide variety of buttons. I'm not super familiar with indie companies out there that sell buttons. I know Each to Own has some really cool, colorful, interesting plastic buttons. And Arrow Mountain also does wood buttons that are really, really cool. But I would love for our listeners to let us know their favorite button suppliers.
Yeah. Yeah. We can do a little roundup, or if you sell buttons or make specialty buttons, please let us know. And we'll try to do a roundup on Instagram where we share all the different cool places where you can get buttons. I also think it would be amazing to experiment with making your own buttons, whether you're making them out of pottery, perhaps. Mm. I've seen potters make buttons, or you're making them out of what's that stuff that you like mold and then bake in your oven? Yeah, polymer clay buttons. I mean, you'll have to experiment a bit to make sure that you're getting a strong button, but it's really fun to experiment with that kind of thing.
Shay has a 3D printer.
Ooh.
And I've been thinking like it would be really fun to 3D print some buttons.
That would be cool. You should do a time-lapse video of a button being 3D printed.
That would be really cool. I mean, Shay would be so game. He's like always just like waiting for me to ask him to 3D print something.
Okay.
So, but I feel like how could we make it cool? Like not just a regular button. It's got to be like something cool. And different.
What if it's like a square button with a shank that has our logo like sort of recessed into it or something like that?
Ooh.
I'd love to sew button.
Okay.
That'd be cute.
I'd love to sew button.
Do it just for the time lapse. I want to watch that.
Okay, cool. I'm on it.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. But I mean, there are a lot of places to get buttons. You guys probably already have your own button sources, but we want to hear about all your online sources so we can share them with everybody else.
Yes. All right. So what are, there's like two main styles of buttons out there.
Yes. So there is a sew-through button, which typically has two or four holes in the center. And sew-through buttons are attached by sewing through those holes. On a thin fabric, the buttons can be stitched flat to the garment. But on a thicker fabric, you want to create a thread shank to help ensure the button can pass through the buttonhole thickness and lie flat on your garment without making a divot. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also a shank button. So shank buttons have metal, plastic, or wooden loop on the back, and that raises the button off of the fabric. So when you're securing a shank button, the thread is looped through the shank and hidden from the right side.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, self-covered buttons, you know, when you buy those buttons that you can cover yourself in fabric, those are shank buttons.
Yeah. What's your preference? Do you go for shank or sew through more often?
I typically go for sew through, although I do think there's a place for shank buttons, like in a cool jacket project, or if there's like a statement button.
Yeah.
I'm not really a statement button kind of person, but I feel like shank buttons are good for that.
I do also go for sew through typically. I mean, I think it's good to have a collection of basic buttons like tortoise shell, white, black, gray, whatever kind of look you are typically going for. Having a collection of shirting buttons if you're making a lot of button up shirts, because tortoise shell buttons really look great on so many things. And that's usually the style I go through, is a sew through tortoise shell button.
Mm-hmm. Same. All right. So we have some tips for button sewing success to start us off.
Mm-hmm.
Our first tip is interfacing. So when you're sewing on buttons, it's always a good idea to interface behind the button where it's going to be sewn. So you're just reinforcing that area, giving it a little bit of extra strength, because of course there is stress in those areas where you're buttoning something up and you're moving around and the button takes a little bit of stress. You want to make sure that fabric doesn't rip. Mm-hmm. So interfacing is always a good idea.
Yeah, you might just put a little square of interfacing behind a button, or if you're making a button-up shirt, chances are that the placket has already been interfaced at the beginning stages of the pattern, so you don't need to worry about adding extra interfacing, but just making sure there's some extra support. And then when you're sewing on a button to a light or medium weight fabric, using a double strand of all-purpose thread that's being used, the same thread that's being used to sew the garment, that's a good idea too, so you can double strand it.
But in contrast, heavier weight fabrics, you probably want to use a heavier weight thread. So something like an upholstery thread or a heavy duty buttonhole twist or even carpet thread is a good idea for those like heavyweight coat projects.
Mm-hmm. And you can run your thread through beeswax or thread heaven, and then running the tip of your iron along the thread, that can really help to strengthen your thread and also to untangle it so that it doesn't get too knotted up when you're sewing on your buttons. Have you ever sewn like a bunch of loops and then you turn it over and there's like a big nest on the back because you didn't realize that it was all tangled?
Yeah.
Take your time when you're sewing on buttons, guys.
The nice thing about thread heaven actually is that you don't have to run it through the iron after.
True.
You just have to kind of, you like run the thread through the thread heaven, which is just, it's the thread conditioner. It's just not beeswax. And then you kind of use your fingers to smooth out that thread conditioner over the thread. You don't have to have the iron component. So I really like my thread conditioner.
Yeah, they last forever too. You need one for like life.
For life, I know. Okay, so then for shank buttons, you need to sew them by hand. There's no way that you can sew that with a machine. There is no machine attachment that will sew a shank button. So the best way to do that is to bring the needle to the button mark and pass it through the shank and all fabric layers. So you're basically just looping that thread through your fabric and the shank of the button, and repeat that about 5 times. And then you can secure the thread between the garment and the facing. If there's a facing, you can secure the thread kind of inside, in between the facing and the main fabric or the outside fabric, so that that knot is not visible. Or you can tie it at the base of the shank in between the button and the main fabric so that it's hidden underneath the button.
And then for your sew through buttons, you can either machine sew or hand sew through buttons. I do both. It kind of depends on my mood. Sometimes I want that sitting on my couch project, hand sewing on my buttons, and you can really take your time and have lots of control. And then sometimes I'm just like, it's the final stage of the project and I just want to finish it. And then I try to do them on my machine. And it works pretty well, but it is kind of finicky and frustrating, I find, to do it on my machine. But maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I have some thoughts about that when we talk further about sewing by machine. But let's talk about sewing by hand first, because I think most people are going to be sewing on their buttons by hand.
Definitely.
So the first thing you want to do is anchor your thread. So if you're using a double strand of thread, you want to knot those threads together so that when you're pulling them through your fabric, they won't just pull right on through. You want that thread to stop. Like in most hand sewing, you start with a knot at the end, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to insert the needle between the garment and the facing so that you can hide the knot. And if there is no facing, you can just insert the needle on the right side of the fabric so that knot is going to get hidden between the button and the fabric, as we mentioned earlier. And you want to sew one or two tiny stitches through the fabric to anchor the thread on the fabric before you attach that button. So that's something that I learned from our friend who's super knowledgeable when she was teaching me how to sew on buttons properly, was anchoring that thread to the fabric first. I never used to do that. I used to just like pull the thread through the back of the fabric, the knot would be visible on the inside, and I just start sewing that button. Like,
I mean, I still do that sometimes.
Yeah, which is, it's just fine. But if you want to go for that like little bit of upping your sewing game, a little bit more of a professional finish, anchoring that thread and also trying to hide that knot behind the button is a really nice way to go. So yeah, like I said, sew those one or two tiny stitches through all the fabric layers to anchor the thread, and then position the button over the stitches and start sewing on that button.
So to sew the button, you bring the sewing needle up through one hole and down through the other, ensuring you're sewing through all of the layers, and then just keep repeating that. So if you have a two-hole button, sewing around five times is standard. If you have a four-hole button, sewing three times through each pair of holes works. And with a four-hole button, you get to make some fun choices because you can have an X on the front of your button. If you're using a contrasting thread, this can look really fun too. It's just like a tiny little X in a different color, or you can have two parallel lines. So you get to decide.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you tend to go for when you're sewing on buttons.
I like the crisscross.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I almost always go for the crisscross. I think if you had a fabric that had some really cool vertical or horizontal lines, then maybe using your buttonholes to echo those lines in the placement position of them could be really fun.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So then again, you're going to secure your thread between the garment and the facing, or under the buttonhole on the right side, and knot it up there so that you're not having that knot visible on the inside of the garment.
Exactly.
Preferably.
And as a final touch, sometimes I put a little dot of fray check on my buttons.
Oh.
Just to like make sure that they're not going to come apart.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Good idea.
I've noticed that on ready-to-wear shirts, typically Sam's button-up shirts, that the buttonholes are never anchored, or the buttons are never anchored on. Like, they've been sewn around, you know, five times, mm-hmm. but there's no knots anywhere, so they just eventually pull come out. Off.
Yeah.
And I always have to sew them back on, which mm-hmm. is really annoying.
This episode is brought to you by Buffy. Buffy makes bedding that is super comfy and super sustainable. Buffy products are made using only renewable and recycled materials, which makes them as soft on the planet as they are on your bed.
Buffy comforters keep you at the perfect temperatures while you sleep, so you feel cozy and comfortable without overheating. Sam and I both really struggle with overheating while we sleep, and our new Buffy comforter is seriously a game changer. We both love how light and cozy it is, and we are definitely sleeping better than we were with our old comforter.
The Buffy Cloud Comforter is softer than cotton and naturally soothes skin. It's made out of eucalyptus, which uses 10 times less water than cotton to grow, and this ultra-breathable fiber is produced using recyclable, earth-friendly solvents.
Yes, and the inside fill of each Buffy comforter is made from 100% recycled water bottles. These bottles are given a second life as super fluffy fiber. After only 1 year, Buffy has recycled and reused over 6 million water bottles. They let us try their comforters, and we are smitten. The outer layer made from eucalyptus is seriously so soft.
Buffy offers a free trial, so you can try it for yourself. If you don't love it, return it at no cost. For $20 off your Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter promo code love to sew. That's buffy.co, promo code love to sew for $20 off.
Do.
All right. So sewing by machine, it's really fun if you have that opportunity with your machine to sew a button on with it. It's a really great thing to experiment with. So you can use a special button foot or just a standard open toe embroidery foot to get that button on. And you want to adjust your machine to the zigzag stitch and then set the stitch length to zero or disengage the feed dog so that you're just sewing side to side and not worrying about the machine moving forward mm-hmm. and backwards.
Your machine might even have machine has a setting for this. Yes. So you just say, I'm sewing a button, and then it disengages the feed dogs and does all that stuff.
Yeah. My Bernina has a special button sewing foot and that setting, and it's super cool, but you have to go slow. Yeah. Ask me how I know.
I've broken some buttons
in my day because you have to make sure that, especially when you're starting out, that those holes are lined up perfectly. I've actually seen people use just a piece of tape to hold that button in place because it can be hard to manage. You're lowering your presser foot while you're trying to hold that button in just the right spot that you marked.
Yeah.
And then also you want to use your hand crank wheel to get it started. So it's like a lot. So if you have just like a piece of tape that can hold it in place, or even now that I think of it, like Wonder Tape would be great because it'll wash away just to hold that button down in the exact place that you want. And then that'll help you have a little bit more control. But like I said, go slow because you don't want like a shard of button hitting you in the eye.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely broken some buttonholes too. The needle comes down and it misses the hole and shatters your button.
Yeah.
Which is probably not great for your machine either.
Yeah.
I usually do the whole thing with my hand wheel.
Yeah.
So you're only going back and forth five times or so. So just crank it a few times until it's got a nice stitch on there and then turn your button if necessary.
Yeah, but it's nice, like on my machine, if I use the setting, like I start it off slowly, but then it goes for me and it does the exact amount of stitches that I want, and then it also stitches in place to back tack or like knot the thread for me. And then I also do like a whole extra step of making sure that I'm leaving long thread tails, and then I use a hand sewing needle to pull the front threads through to the back and tie them in a knot. Mm. Now that does leave a visible knot on the backside, but that doesn't bother me because I know it's really nice and secure, and at the end of the day it's on the inside of the garment. So anyway, so if you don't have that setting on your machine, you're going to set the stitch width equal to the distance between the holes. I guess even with the setting on your machine, you want to make sure, usually that distance is pretty standard, but you just want to make sure that it's the right distance, and then slowly turn that wheel to determine the correct width. And once you find the right width, like Helen said, you can hand crank that wheel to make several stitches and finish it by locking the thread in one hole. So sew in place with a straight stitch at the zero length if you can. And if you want to do the long thread tails thing, that'll give you some extra security.
Yeah. This works well if you're doing the lightweight button on lightweight fabrics where you don't need to create a thread shank. It's harder to create that thread shank with a machine sewn on button. And I don't know, is machine sewing on buttons faster than hand sewing? Depends how good you are at hand sewing.
That's true. Yeah. It stresses me out, but I still do it because I'm lazy and I don't like hand sewing, but you're right. You said that to me before where I'm like, I'm going to sew it by machine. And you're like, is that really faster? And I'm like, it's maybe not faster, but it feels easier in some ways. It's
more dangerous.
It is. It's living more on the risky. Edge. If you have a finite amount of buttons, or if you're working with really special buttons, like glass buttons or vintage buttons, mm-hmm. sew them on by hand.
Yeah. I think it's a nice moment. You finished your garment. You're doing the final thing. You're sewing on your buttonholes. Just sit down, hold it in your hands, appreciate it, love it. Stick it under your machine and like pray to God that it's going to work.
It is one of the few things that you can do in sewing, like in front of the TV or like not at your sewing machine, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a nice final touch.
Yeah. Speaking of the fact that it's the final touch, I mean, how many of us have left a garment hanging in our closet for a year without sewing the buttonholes on?
I still haven't sewn they're not buttons, but the little snaps on my Yates coat.
Oh my gosh.
My Yates coat is just open in the front.
Why does that always end up like tripping us up as sewists? We just get to that final point and then we're like, well, I'll do the buttonholes one day.
Yeah. I'll just wear it open.
Or you can't even wear it because it won't close. Yeah. Or like, I don't know. It's ridiculous. But So just if you're in that position, we've all been there.
Yeah. But also, here's a little nudge to go sew those buttons.
Go finish it.
Yeah, go finish that garment.
It doesn't take as long as you think.
All right. So for certain projects, you might want to provide some extra support for your button above and beyond that little piece of interfacing or the facing that you might already have in your garment. So one of those things is creating a thread shank. So that might be useful if you want to ensure that there's no puckering or indenting in the fabric. So think of it this way. If you are pulling a button through a buttonhole and that buttonhole is in thick fabric, you need space for the fabric to sit in between the button and the other piece of fabric, if that makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm explaining that
weird. You need a little bit of space. If your button is like jammed right up against your fabric, then how are you going to have any room to slide more fabric underneath there without creating this like little indent or pucker?
Exactly. It'll put extra stress on your fabric. It's going to not look professional.
It's hard to take on and off.
Oh, yeah. It's hard. Exactly. That's like the biggest thing. I've made that mistake. And then I'm like, why isn't this button going through? It's because it needs that space to breathe. So a thread shank can be created with the assistance of a straight pin or a toothpick that can act as a spacer. So you place that pin or toothpick in the center of the button vertically, and you sew on the button as normal, ensuring that the thread is tight over the space. So basically, that toothpick acts as the spacer piece, and that is taking the place of what the fabric will be later, or where the fabric will be later.
Yeah, and then toothpick for like a thicker fabric and a pin for a thinner fabric.
Yeah, and you can just pull that out when you're finished sewing. But it's really nice to have that handy. I have a bunch of toothpicks just in my hand sewing toolkit because I know that I use them for that. And we also learned this week that some seam gauges have a special piece that can help with this. We learned that via our listeners. One of our listeners sent us a picture of a seam gauge and was like, what is this weird U-shaped piece on the end? And I suspected it might be for that, but we weren't sure. We couldn't find anything on Google. So we asked our listeners and it was confirmed that that piece was for spacer. And sometimes there are even several U-shaped pieces. So depending on the thickness of your fabric, you have more spacer.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll include that photo in the show notes for you guys to see, but it's really cool if you see, I haven't seen a seam gauge like this, but if you see one, get one, because I think that's a really handy tool.
Yeah. You can use a lot of things for spacers, and it is really important. So experiment a little bit with it. It's hard to do the spacer and the machine sewing at the same time, like I mentioned earlier. So I think if you're planning to space out your buttons, just do it by hand. You'll have an easier go of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. In my humble opinion.
Yeah. And then as a final step, when you're adding that little thread shank, is you want to bring the threaded needle up through the fabric to the base of the stitches and wind the thread around several times, and then you can knot it at the base. So that would be in between the button and the fabric, so that you're really securing that thread shank into one little bundle, if you will.
Yeah, I like it.
Yep.
It's very satisfying to wind it around.
It is. It's like that final little step. You're like, woo, yeah, I'm done.
Hey everyone, we want to tell you about a podcast we think you will really enjoy. It's called Dressed, The History of Fashion. Fashion is about more than pretty clothes. What we wear matters, and each episode of Dressed explores the cultural, social, and political importance of clothing.
Hosted by fashion historians April Callahan and Cassidy Zachary, the duo scour primary source material to bring you stories straight from the glossy pages of fashion history. From the inimitable Hubert de Givenchy to Leah Gottlieb, the pioneering founder of the luxury swimwear brand Gore-Tex, Dressed explores fashion's movers and shakers from the most famous to the relatively unknown.
Recent episodes include a two-part history of the swimsuit, one of the most controversial garments of all time, while another explored the history of hair work, the fashion for wearing jewelry made from human hair. One of our favorite episodes is The Body, Fashion and Physique, an exploration of the fashionable body and how it shifts over time. We all love making our own clothes, and this podcast helps us learn more about the history behind the garments.
Each week's episode is accompanied by images posted daily to their Instagram at @dressed_podcast. Episodes are released weekly on Tuesdays, just like us. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We know you're going to love Dressed, so go check it out. And now, on to the show. Okay, what's a backer button?
Okay, this is another thing you can do to secure your button really well. And you may have seen this on ready-to-wear garments before. It's a small flat button on the inside of the garment underneath the main button. So you've got your button on top that you actually use to close your garment. And then underneath, there's like a little tiny button there. And you're like, what's that button for? It's a really good idea for knits or loosely woven fabrics because this backer button can provide a lot of extra security. So the backer button should have similarly spaced holes so you can actually sew these two buttons in one fell swoop together. And you can still make your thread shank if you want to on the top and finish the stitch behind the backer button so you can hide your knot behind the backer button. For lightweight fabric, instead of a backer button, adding a small piece of interfacing or other stabilizing material on the wrong side adds that extra support as well.
I've also seen backer buttons in like trench coats or jackets where it's not like a heavyweight wool or canvas fabric. Maybe it's like a slightly lighter weight cotton twill, but you know it's going to get a lot of stress. You know, you're layering sweaters underneath this jacket and you're moving around a lot when you're out and about. So having that extra backer button is just going to strengthen that fabric, strengthen that area a little bit more. Just provide that little extra layer of security. And it looks super professional.
It looks so cool.
Yeah, it kind of like instead of having just a bunch of thread, you know, loops on the backside of your fabric, you have this button, which makes it look a lot more finished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would put a backer button, like you said, on a jacket or coat, but maybe not on like a fine button up shirt.
Yeah.
Because then you have a lot of buttons.
Yeah.
You don't want to weigh it down in the front.
Yeah. All right. So it's time to talk about buttonholes.
Buttonholes. The other side of the buttons and buttonholes episode.
Yes.
Okay, so there are a few ways that you can sew buttonholes. It's a quite intimidating thing for a lot of beginner sewists, getting to that point where you can sew your first buttonhole or button, not really knowing how to approach it. Maybe your machine has a buttonhole foot or setting that you've never used because you're scared of it. And just know that that's totally normal. It can take a little bit of working up to get to this point. And you can also hand sew buttonholes. It's doable. It can be done for jackets and coats. It's been done historically plenty of times. So you could do it too. If you don't have a sewing machine that does buttonholes, it's possible you can still join the buttonhole club.
Yeah. Definitely. So you want to consider interfacing early on. So typically this is already included in the garment facings. We've talked about this before in this episode, but consider if more stabilization is needed with lighter weight or loosely woven fabric. So you want to think about that in advance because you want that to be kind of sandwiched in your fabric if you can.
Exactly.
And buttonhole placement is typically indicated on the pattern pieces. So those markings can be transferred over to your fabric pieces. Of course, if you make modifications or adjustments to the pattern pieces, you want to consider changing the button or buttonhole placement.
Yeah.
Similarly, like if you're, let's say, going from three big buttons to smaller buttons, then you need more buttons along that, you know, closure.
Yeah.
Because a small button isn't going to work the same way as a big button.
Or if you've maybe turned your shirt into a crop top and then you use the buttonhole placement that's recommended by the pattern, maybe you end up with one buttonhole that's like half an inch away from the hem, which looks kind of weird and out of place. So you want to re-space your buttons to fit whatever modifications you made to your pattern.
Yeah. Also for me, because I'm larger busted, when I'm sewing a button-up shirt, I always try to make sure that there's a button right at my bust line because that's where I often will have that gaping. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time we'll just adjust the placement of my buttons altogether. I won't follow the markings on the pattern. I'll just make sure I have one, you know, at the bust, one closing the collar, like the, and the collar stand, and then equally space them in between with however many buttons I want to use. Mm-hmm. You can get one of those really cool like button marking, what spacers? Are they called? They're like little accordions almost.
Yeah.
And those are really fun and helpful when you're kind of winging your button placement.
Yeah. I love using those, or you can just use a quilting ruler. And I typically will pin closed my placket on a shirt where I'm planning to put my buttonholes. And then that way I can see in the mirror, move my arms around and make sure that everything is, like you said, not gaping at the front there.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So in terms of orientation, buttonholes are typically positioned horizontally or vertically. But in some cases, get this, diagonally.
What? I've never seen that.
Who does that?
I'm sure it's a thing. I haven't encountered it yet.
All right. So horizontal buttonholes can take the most strain without stretching out of shape, right? Because you've got those bar tacks on either side of the buttonhole. So those can really take a lot of stress, and they provide a secure closure. So those are great for jackets, coats, jeans, waistbands, that kind of thing.
Vertical buttons provide a secure closure as long as the buttons are not too large. And these are good for shirts or blouses that are not close fitting. So the reason why you don't want to do a vertical buttonhole with a large button is because you have then a pretty big hole. Imagine a big vertical buttonhole. That's actually a big hole. And if you put any stress on it, it's going to pull open, gape open, and then your button could pop out, or it's just not going to look very good. So vertical buttons for smaller buttons, horizontal buttons for larger buttons.
In addition to different buttonhole orientation, there's different buttonhole types. So you can consult your sewing machine manual to know what buttonhole sewing options you have available to you. Standard buttonhole with a lengthwise bar is just two parallel rows of satin stitches with a bar tack at the top and bottom. And a satin stitch, for those of you who don't know that term, it's when your upper thread is a little bit looser than your bobbin thread. So your threads are being pulled to the back of your garment and you get this beautiful arcing stitch where you don't see any of that bobbin thread. It's all tucked away and snug on the backside.
Mm-hmm. You can also find rounded buttonholes. So this is where the two parallel rows still exist, but there's a rounded edge on one side. And there are different variations of the rounded buttonhole, one with a pointed end, another with a lengthwise bar on the other end. These rounded buttonholes are used for blouses, jackets, sportswear. My machine does them. I don't often use that setting, but It's nice to have the option.
I used to use rounded buttonholes almost exclusively because I use my Singer buttonholer attachment and it goes around. So instead of doing bar tacks at either end, it just does, you know, like a, I don't know, it does like a crescent shape at either end. So you get that rounded shape. It can also do keyholes, similar kind of thing, but a little ball at the end. Oh, that's our next thing.
Yeah.
So a keyhole buttonhole is the same parallel rows of stitching, but then it has a little rounded bit at the end. So it looks just like a keyhole does. And there's a few variations on the keyhole buttonhole. You can see this kind of buttonhole often on jeans, outerwear, typically for heavier fabrics, coats and things like that. It does elevate the look a little bit and it gives space for buttons that have a large shank. Like imagine a jean buttonhole has a pretty thick metal shank on there. So you button your jeans and then it slides over and sits in that keyhole and it gives it space so you don't have any distortion of your fabric.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right. So when you are making these buttonholes, let's talk about doing that on a machine.
Sure. So some machines have automatic one-step buttonhole functions. Some machines have little feet. Mine has like a foot that you have to plug in in order, like it's a separate thing that you plug in and then you attach it to the foot. And then it does really beautiful buttonholes. But on my old vintage machine, I was using that buttonholer attachment I was just talking about. It's a vintage Singer buttonholer. I have a story about it in my highlighted on my Instagram at Helen's_closet. So you can check that out and watch and see how it looks. And I've seen a lot of people pick these up since I started sharing about it, which is really cool. You can buy them on eBay. They're not that expensive. If you have a low shank sewing machine, it will work. You don't need to have a Singer to get the Singer buttonhole attachment. And it makes beautiful buttonholes.
I have one.
Oh yeah, you got one.
Yeah, my friend found one at not a garage sale, but kind of like one of those markets. What are they called? Flea markets?
Flea markets.
Cool. Yeah. She found one for $10 at a flea market.
That's awesome. Amazing. They're amazing, especially if you have one of those old machines where it doesn't have a buttonhole function at all.
Yeah.
Then this just opens up the world of buttonholes to you. And honestly, it makes more beautiful buttonholes than modern sewing machines.
It does.
It makes gorgeous buttonholes and it's really easy because you just put the attachment on and then you just have to hit your foot pedal and it does all the work for you, moving the fabric and everything. So it really takes the stress out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. My Bernina has a buttonhole foot and it does it all in one step. And there's several different style options, but I usually use just like the two standard ones. One has a wider satin stitch and one has like a narrower satin stitch. And I kind of use them depending on the project that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect though. I mean, my Bernina, it's like a little bit finicky with the buttonholes.
I have never encountered a machine that does buttonholes
perfectly
confidently every time.
Yeah.
Like it just beeps at you and then it goes backwards.
backwards instead of forwards.
Yeah, or like it keeps sewing or...
Yeah, you're like, you're supposed to turn around.
What do you do? Like, I mean, we've had this in workshops too at Blackbird where like, you know, you're getting to the final stage and you're sewing that buttonhole on your like pants and people are having issues and it's super stressful. And like, how do you deal with that stress in the final moments when a buttonhole is going wrong and it's like, you feel like it's totally ruined your project?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have a no buttonholes past 10 p.m. policy. Same goes for zippers. So if it's the end of the night, it's not happening. Yeah. Like, you need to take a step back and do buttonholes when you are fresh. That's my first and most important tip. And also, you need to do tests. Never just put your project under a machine and be like, I'm going to do a buttonhole. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure it's working on a scrap piece of fabric first. And with that scrap piece of fabric, you want the same number of layers of fabric that you're going to be using in your project, the same interfacing. Try to replicate what you're going to be doing with your project on your scrap to make sure your buttonhole is working. Don't just put one piece of fabric under.
Yeah.
Those are my two tips. But you know what? Even after testing on a scrap, sometimes you put it under your machine and it decides to do something crazy. Mm-hmm. But that's why I love the buttonhole attachment, because it never does something crazy. It does the same thing every time.
The Singer buttonhole attachment,
yeah.
You mean?
Yeah. It really does.
I think like at the end of the day, I try to remember that it's just... You know, it's just a sewing project. And like at the end of the day, if this buttonhole goes wrong, you can take it out of your machine. You can take your time and unpick it. It is unpickable, even though it's tiny little satin stitches. Like, it's possible to unpick that and you can just kind of smooth out your fabric and you probably won't even notice. And really, there's going to be a button covering that buttonhole. So when you're wearing it, nobody's going to know that it got messed up.
No, it's true. Know? Yeah. Even if it's a little wonky.
Yeah.
I often get wonky ones on my jeans because there's a lot of bulk there in the waistband with all the denim. And sometimes, you know, the sewing machine foot's like a little bit like trying to get in there and it's sort of angled or weird. And you're like trying to make it straight and in the middle and it doesn't always work out. But you know what? No one ever notices.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a thing people notice. And if you're really, really, really frustrated and your machine is just not your buttonhole friend, you can sew it by hand. We're talking about a series of tightly stitched satin stitches, which you can totally do by hand. It will take a little while, but just imagine how perfect you can make it. And that's exactly the same thing as doing it on the machine. One is not stronger than the other. So go for it. Mm-hmm. If you just have that one jeans buttonhole to do, try doing it by hand, but use a thimble so you don't hurt your fingers.
Yes. Okay, so back to sewing your buttonholes on your machine. If you have an automatic one-step buttonhole function, your machine will have a special buttonhole presser foot, and that's going to allow you to sew a buttonhole the size that you want it. So often when you're putting in that little buttonhole attachment, there's going to be a spot for you to slide in your button into the actual foot. It has like a little sliding gauge, and that's going to determine the length needed for the buttonhole. If you don't have the automatic buttonhole function on your sewing machine, you need to calculate the buttonhole size and position. And there is a little formula for that. So you do this by measuring the button and adding together its diameter and height or depth or thickness. And then you want to add an eighth of an inch to accommodate for the shank and the slight size change due to the fabric thickness. So add all those measurements together and that's the length of your buttonhole.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And once you're ready, you can give it a go based on the buttonhole instructions in your machine's manual. Again, test on a scrap. You want to not just test the fact that you can, in fact, sew a buttonhole, but you also want to cut it open. And ideally, you sew your button onto another piece of fabric and you try it out and see, does it go smoothly? Am I going to be comfortable taking this garment on and off repeatedly? Do a full test.
Yeah, because there's nothing worse than doing all your buttonholes, sewing on all your buttons, and then realizing that your buttonholes are too small.
Yeah.
Right. Has that ever happened to you? It's definitely happened to me. And then I'm like, I'm gonna get it through, I swear.
Yeah, you just like deal with eventually it. You kind of massage it through enough times that it sort of works. But yeah. Realistically, you're probably not gonna reach for that garment very often. Mm-hmm.
So when you're cutting open your buttonholes, you wanna use like a buttonhole chisel, also known as a buttonhole cutter, or potentially a little pair of small snips or a single edge razor. So you'd have that like maybe on a cutting mat or a piece of wood and you just kind of cut that opening. But I always like to use my buttonhole chisel. I feel like that's the safest way to go.
I like my buttonhole chisel investment. Too. Yeah. If you are in a pinch, you can use your seam ripper, but do Mm-mm. put a pin Mm-mm. at the end of your buttonhole.
No.
It works. I've done it.
I know it works, but I've seen horror stories of people who are like, I used the pin, but my seam ripper still went right through.
How?
Because it's like, if you go super fast, like the fabric might like move or the pin might bend. Or
that's true.
You got to be careful. I don't. Mm-mm.
So if you don't have a chisel, you think scissors is a better way to go.
I think scissors, because you can kind of fold your buttonhole and just get a little snip in there. Like, yeah, you kind of snip enough your to fabric get your scissors and then in. You just get your little snips in and just slowly cut it open. Yeah. And then you have so much more control. Same thing with if you use like one of those little like razor, like those craft razors,
yeah,
and you're doing it on a flat surface, like you have so much more control. That's, you know, true.
Yeah,
but either way, you want to use fray check along the cut edges. I like to do it before I cut it open, let it dry, open the buttonhole, and then fray check it again just for that extra security. Mm-hmm. It's going to seal those raw edges, so fray check prevents it from fraying. Mm-hmm. One thing I'll say is test out that fray check on your fabric in like an inconspicuous area or fabric scrap before you do it on your main garment, because once in a while that fray check will stain. So just look out for that. I've seen it happen.
I have seen it happen as well. Mostly on Instagram. It's never happened to me. I think most fabrics are pretty fray check friendly, but it's always good to check if you're adding something to your fabric. And I want to say too that when you're cutting open your buttonhole, the whole idea is that you're only cutting the fabric and that those threads remain intact and they're bound along the edge, and you have a few extra like little bits fraying away, which is why the fray check is nice. It also strengthens the threads. But if you are seeing the threads from your buttonhole popping open as though they've been cut and they're no longer that beautiful satin stitch, then that's bad. that means that there was probably not enough space in between your two parallel rows of stitching. Maybe when your buttonhole went around to do the other side, it didn't move over enough for whatever reason, bulky fabric, stuff like that. So keep a lookout for that when you're cutting your buttonhole open. You don't want to cut those threads.
Yeah, you want to be nice and precise there.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you are wanting to maybe add some strength to your buttonholes, maybe it's a heavier weight fabric, maybe it's something where you just feel like it's going to get a lot of wear, a lot of stress, you want to make sure that those buttonholes are really, really strong, you can do a corded buttonhole. Have you ever done this before?
I haven't.
Me neither. But we do have some info for you guys about it.
Do as we say and not as we do.
So you can use top stitching thread or pearl cotton thread or buttonhole twist thread, and you're going to place and sew the thread under the buttonhole stitching for added stability. So as you're sewing that buttonhole, your thread is going like underneath the satin stitch in between the fabric and the satin stitch, and it's going to add that extra, yeah, it's like going into a little satin tunnel.
Yeah, satin tunnel.
The thicker the thread, the higher the buttonhole will be raised, because you're creating the buttonhole stitches over the cord and thread. So keep that in mind. It'll become bulkier the thicker the cord is.
Mm-hmm. It could look really beautiful though.
It could, yeah. And then on some buttonhole presser feet, there's a small hook at one end where you can attach the cording at the back and run it through the front, which you can hold for stabilization while you sew it down with the buttonhole stitching. We have a link on YouTube. This might be hard to imagine, but we have a link for you guys, which you can check out. We're going to link it in the show notes.
Yeah, and you can also do a twice stitched buttonhole for added stability. You can consider stitching over the basic buttonhole a second time. I often do this with my Singer buttonhole attachment. I find it really does help to go around at least twice.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any alternatives to buttonholes if we still haven't won over any of those folks out there who haven't tried buttonholes yet?
Yeah, I think there are alternatives, and also just certain garments are going to have different ways to secure the button. So button loops are an option. I see that a lot at like the back of a blouse, if there's a little keyhole opening, exactly, you have a little loop. So if you don't plan on creating a buttonhole in a garment, another option is hand sewing a thread loop on the edge. So using buttonhole twist thread or like a heavier duty thread is really great for making button loops. You can use a pencil to create that space at the edge. So insert the needle and create the loop around the pencil. I love this tip, by the way. And stitch through the edge on the other side. So just repeat that back and forth several times, and then knot them together and finish it with a blanket stitch. Again, I understand this is hard to imagine, so we will link a video in the show notes for you to see how that works.
Both these videos are from Professor Pincushion. Thank you, Professor Pincushion.
Yeah, seriously.
Good name.
All right, so finally, we would be remiss if we did not mention bound buttonholes.
Yes.
The thing that I fear above all other things.
think it's so bad. I was watching Jessica make that amazing jacket that she's been working on, mm-hmm. the green one, and she did the bound buttonholes on there and they looked so good. And I was like, man, I really need to get over my fear of bound buttonholes. They're just tiny little welt pockets.
It is. They're the most adorable little welt pockets. I think that they're a really great, like, extra special touch for a coat or a jacket or maybe a really special dress or skirt that you want to kind of take that over the edge, up your sewing game, try out some couture techniques. It's a really great technique if you're working with wools or other really stable, tightly woven fabrics or lined garments. And like you said, it looks like a really tiny double welt pocket. And there's a great article in Threads magazine that walks you through the process, full of tips from Claire Schaefer on sewing a bound buttonhole. So we'll link that in the show notes because I'm not going to try to explain that.
You should try it though, even just for experiment's sake. Maybe you don't have a project on the go that warrants a bound buttonhole, but you can take some scrap fabric and just try it out. And then when the time comes, you'll be like, oh, I know how to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No problem.
Okay. I have a final thought about buttonholes.
What's that?
If you
don't do them.
No, they're so great. If you have a garment district in your city, you might be able to find someone with an industrial buttonholer machine, which is, first of all, super cool to witness. Like, if you've never actually seen one of those cool industrial machines, they're super awesome and very small margin of error. Like, they make beautiful buttonholes every single time. And I would totally use this for like a coat or jacket project. Something that's like, again, really special that you want to spend a little bit extra to make sure it has a super professional ready to wear finish. You just want to make sure you mark your placement before going into the store. I remember when I was in school, we used to always take our finished projects to this guy in the garment district in Montreal to do our buttonholes for us. But it was like, we'd go in there and he would be so mad if we didn't have our markings ready to go. Cause you know, you're a student and you're like, oh, I have to mark. Okay. Well, give me a minute. Do you have a chalk pen? Like, let me make sure. Okay. Go in there, have a plan, have your thread color, have your buttonholes marked and like, you know, be professional.
Yeah.
Don't waste their time.
You can do this with other things too. You can get them to set snaps for you the front of a jacket, which takes a lot of pressure off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So explore that. Maybe you have someone that can do this for you and then you don't have to stress about it.
Yeah. And it doesn't, and it's not only if you live in like New York or LA, like Montreal, Toronto, a lot of cities, bigger cities will have a garment district where there are kind of manufacturers and even just little hole in the wall shops that have these machines that do that for, you know, smaller designers.
Yeah.
So check out your options. All right. So in closing, we hope you feel well equipped to take on buttonholes and buttons for your next project. You can do it, guys.
Yes. And if this will be your first time giving it a try, definitely test it out. It's not as scary as it might seem as long as you're working with, you know, your scrap fabrics first. You can get over that hurdle of just trying out the features on your machine, seeing what happens, seeing if you can figure it out. There's absolutely nothing to lose there. There's no getting it wrong, right?
Yeah.
And then you can move on and do it on your project and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. And have fun with your button choice too, because it can really help bring the garment together, add a little bit of individual flair. Don't forget to let us know if you have any cool button suppliers out there, any indie shops that you love frequenting, or if you are an indie designer that designs buttons, let us know and we'll try to plug them on Instagram this week, because we're always looking for cool small businesses to follow.
Yeah, we are.
All right. Go forth and button.
Happy buttoning.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helensclosetpatterns.com.
My website changed. Oh, it's amazing. Okay, we're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
If you're loving the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. And if you contribute $10 or more a month, you will get exclusive discount codes to our shop and a mini-sode this month. So consider doing that because it's going to be really awesome. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info. We love you. Thank you for your support.
And thank you so much to our amazing team, Sam Humphrey and Melanie Brister. And thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. You can have this jacket in, you know, an afternoon or afternoon.
A really exciting afternoon.
An afternoon.
An afternoon.